Connect and experience art at the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org or call 507-645-8877.
Art Zany, radio for the imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, radio for the imagination.
Good morning. This is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned in to Art Zany, radio for the imagination. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We have some great stories to share with you, and I hope we'll have some fascinating conversations for you to take into your day. I'm going to open up with a little clip from Just Another Day. This is from Next to Normal. This is the original Broadway cast, and we'll take a listen, and you can set your minds thinking about the summer musical you want to go see.
Times like these, I wonder how I take it, and if other families live the way we do, if they love each other or if they just fake it, and if other daughters feel like I feel too, 'cause some days I think I'm dying, but I'm really only trying to get through.
We're just another day for another stolen hour. My power.
Back on Art Zany Radio, and thank the Broadway cast of Next to Normal for that beautiful song. And we should have had the microphones on here because there was a lot of jamming happening inside the studio as the cast was here with me. I just want to give a quick story with the opening because this one has inspired me a lot as I'm learning about the show. And I've been thinking about the idea of conversation and how important conversation is. And I think when I was a kid, I loved to listen to the conversations of all the grown-ups in my world. And they talked about not the world of imagination and play and books and school that I lingered in, but relationships and politics and nature and even chores and history and gossip and medical issues, parenting, traveling, and everything that grown-ups do that I didn't do at that time. And it seemed to me that grown-ups talked all day long and that that's what it meant to be a grown-up. And so I wondered about that. And so, but there are also times when there was a lot of conflict and arguing, and I didn't like those as much because they made me a little bit uneasy. And they were about the topics that we don't talk about anymore: politics, religion, and money. And it seems to me that as we've, you know, through the years, kind of lost some of that ability to have a healthy, friendly debate. We've stepped away from the work of persuasion, compromise, and understanding experiences and viewpoints points that are different than ours. And I think it's made it harder for us to get closer to people, to learn about each other's lives, to connect with neighbors and coworkers and community members. We don't want to upset each other, so we kind of walk around a little bit talking about weather, busyness, comings and goings, and we don't get into these deep conversations that can sometimes change minds or change communities, and it's harder to linger with each other. I know I grew up in the suburbs, and you know, maybe it was that way all around the world, but it's not. But I remember it was very distinct. The timing of life was dads and sometimes moms went off to work, and everybody kind of just gathered together in the street or, you know, or somebody's house for coffee, and they chatted and they talked and they exchanged, you know, stories. And in the weekends and evenings were all about family time and coming together as a neighborhood. And there's not a lot of that happens. And I don't know if it's work schedules or if just I grew up in this little idyllic world. I'm not sure. But now that I'm a grown up, I want to do better with conversations. And that's one of the things I love doing on Art Zany Radio, is bringing some of those conversations and ideas to you to help you think about the world, you know, engage in your imagination, and maybe you'll start to figure out what you want to be when you grow up. And I'm so excited to have this conversation about the next Northfield Arts Guild Theater production in the Striking Series, Striking Conversations series about Next to Normal. So I'm going to turn on the mics and welcome my guests to the studio. I have some fantastic guests who I'm really excited to have this conversation with. I'm going to start off with Eric. Go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell our listeners, you've been on a couple times, but some folks might not know all about you.
Yeah, well, my name is Eric Parrish, and I am the director for Next to Normal, and I've been on a few times for Nine, and I sang in Pirates last year.
That's right,
so
yes.
So we were here for that. And, yeah, so I'm originally from Medford, and I teach music and theater out at Minnesota West Community and Technical College in Worthington. So I come up and hang out on my dad's farm for the summer when I'm up here making art.
So your dad has a farm here in
Medford.
In Medford. Okay.
Yep.
And tell me one thing about Medford that I wouldn't know other than the Outlet Mall.
Well, when I was there, we were the smallest town in the United States to have a McDonald's.
And that was lucky.
That was a big deal.
And you can hear the laughter of my next guest. Go ahead and tell it. Michelle, you've been on the show many times.
I have been. So I'm Michelle Drenth, and I live here in Northfield and have raised multiple children here, and have been in many productions over the years with the Northfield Arts Guild. And I actually worked for Eric. I think, you know, choosing a director is like choosing to work for a manager. And I worked for him in the production Nine, which was in Faribault a few summers ago. So when this musical came up and he was going to direct it, I, you know, said, "When are the auditions? I'd like to be there." So.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And did you grow up in Northfield?
I didn't. I grew up in Bloomington.
Uh-huh.
And I came down here. I went to school at Carleton and then moved to Minneapolis for a little while. Didn't want to be in Northfield just yet, right after college, right? But when I had kids, as my kids got a little bit older and I wanted to put them in the school system, I, you know, did a lot of research on where that would be, and that's when we moved to Northfield.
And that happens, right?
It does.
And when you're at the colleges, it's harder to get to know the community.
It is. Yep, you're a little busy when mm-hmm. you're in college, and you're in your own 18 to 22-year-old world, so.
And you're not thinking about all of those benefits of
that's
living
right.
in the community.
That's
and
right.
And so I would agree with that's an important thing. And we also have a first-time guest on Art Zany Radio. I'd love to have you introduce yourselves to our listeners and talk a little bit. Now, you're in that. Are you 18 yet? I don't.
Yep.
You're
18.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Elijah.
Well, my name is Elijah Lear. I just this spring graduated from Northfield High School.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. In the fall, I'll be going to St. Olaf College. I've lived in Northfield since actually before starting school. And it was probably when I was four, moved here. But I've done a few productions at the Guild, done a lot of work at the high school in their theater department. And yeah, I just love doing it. I actually worked with Eric last summer on the Pirates of Penzance.
Yeah, he was the Frederick to the Pirate King. So that we got, that's how we got to know each other.
You probably had some scenes together.
Mm-hmm. A few.
Oh, yes.
And he still wanted to do a show with me.
No regrets. regrets yet.
there's still time.
Yeah.
So as someone who grew up in Northfield and then thinking about going to college in Northfield, how was that decision process?
Yeah, it was, I looked a lot of other places and, kind of found that St. Olaf had what I wanted, so kind of resignedly came back here.
I do think about that. That's hard when you grow up here to understand and appreciate it. And you know, even though I have a wish for my kids to, but I can't say anything because I might turn it around a little. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to jinx anything. We should talk about this show, Next to Normal, because that is not a show I was familiar with until I saw it on the Arts Guild list. Eric, you want to talk about the particular show and why you came to be at the Arts Guild for this show.
Yeah, so I always, Next to Normal, it won the Pulitzer Prize in 2010, and it was actually very controversial that it won the Pulitzer in that it was not nominated in the shortlist by the committee, and so the deciding voters overruled the list of the Pulitzer for drama, and then they awarded it to Next to Normal.
Oh, I bet that was a kerfuffle.
Yeah, it was. And so there's only like 12 musicals that have ever won that award, and Rent and Hamilton are kind of the two bookends to the Next to Normal. So I always say to people, it's the thing you should know about between Rent that got us to Hamilton.
That makes perfect sense. After listening to some of the album and thinking about the story, it is a perfect bookend, because the music reminded me a little bit of what Rent, which was big when I saw that and loved it and listened to the album over and over and over, and this feels like that. It has that same quality, but maybe not the recognition yet.
Yeah, and I think the topic has a lot to do with its ability to kind of catch on to the mainstream pop culture.
Let's tell folks, yeah, Next to Normal is the production, and it's a musical, but it's a modern story.
Yeah, it's a modern story. It takes place in the, 2010, early 2000s, and it deals with this woman, Diana, who is bipolar depressive, and the dynamics of her family and what that, for lack of better term, condition does to them as a family, and she ends up going through ECT electroshock therapy in the show, and to help resolve as part of her issues with mental health, and it comes to a place that doesn't really tie up the strings in a nice bow, and we walk, it still has an uplifting kind of feel towards it at the end, but it's very intense and it's very relentless in that intensity. I think that's what's so fascinating about it. Even last night at rehearsal, yeah, we were cleaning up a little bit of the second act, and I've been hesitating as a director to go there, because it's just like, oh, it's so heavy and it's so relentless. And it takes me a while when I go home actually at night to kind of shut it off. But, but it really, it calls for that, and it really is appropriate because when dealing with mental health issues, it is relentless and it is overwhelming and the show does a really beautiful job of making that anguish beautiful.
And I think that that's a really important part of the story of this show, is that in 2009 or 10, our country might not have been ready for this conversation, but we've come a long way in getting rid of some of the stigma about discussing that and helping people. And Michelle, for you, you play that mother.
I do. And I think, you feel the weight and the responsibility of treating this character with respect. I mean, she's not a caricature, right? She's she's an interesting, fun woman who happens to be dealing with a mental illness that sometimes gets a hold of her to the point where she separates from reality. And I think that's, I feel a responsibility, if you want to think about it that way, to play her in such a way that she's absolutely relatable. This isn't like, oh, look at that. You know, that's something that would never happen, or somebody I would never know, or something like that. This is a person that I hope people look at and go, I know people like that. I hope that that comes across. And you see the struggles that her family has with it. And I think we are in a much better place as a nation, to think about mental health issues and not just the effect that they have on the person who is dealing with it, but the people around them, the people in relationship with them.
Yeah, I think that you used the word relentless, and that is such an important piece of the puzzle, because it is day, night, round the clock.
That's right.
It's the family is a part of that situation, and they don't get to walk away.
That's right. And, you know, what's interesting about mental health issues, too, is oftentimes you solve them for a time.
Mm.
You know, medical treatment works for a time, whether that's a pharmaceutical treatment or, you know, pharmaceutical plus talk therapy or whatever it is. Those often work for a while, and then they wear off, just because the way our brains work and adapt and, you know, go back to their natural state, right? So you watch that happen in this. You think she's gotten better, right? And things seem to be going super well, and they aren't. And that's how that works. In real life, so.
And I think that's a fascinating piece of the story. And to be able to go and be an audience member who gets to be in that experience for just a little bit,
yeah.
And then hopefully you'll step out and have some conversation about it.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's a really bizarre topic for a musical. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, when you really think about it, so the authors have done several interviews. This was the first musical that really utilized social media to advertise. It was kind of that right at the beginning of that time in the, 2009. And so there's extensive interviews online with the authors, and it was based on somewhat of a true story. I mean, the idea came from an actual event, and then they built the story around that. But it is really hard, I think, as musical theater performers. You know, I'm going to throw Elijah under the bus a little bit here. He likes.
Here we go.
when
we were in Pirates, which is very musical comedy, and that's his thing. And so it's really hard to be on stage in a musical and have musical comedy instincts. Like, oh, this moment is dramatized with musical punctuation, and so as an actor, the instinct is to play it up and go there, and this is very much like an opera in that the music is just the way we communicate to you. It's not that it's a musical comedy, right? It's just the way we speak, the language of this show happens to be through song, and they're really realistic characters, So it's very much like, Tennessee Williams meets Wagner in its style, in that
a very American story, but it has
but it has this kind of grand way of communicating it to you. And so I keep getting after Elijah. I'm like, you can't play the comedy because it's real, right?
So tell us, Elijah, what is your character in the production, and how have you managed that line?
Yeah, so my character's name is Henry, and I kind of like to think of him as on the outside looking in to what this family is kind of all about, because it's everyone in the four-person family that's...
Are you the son? No.
No. So I'm Diana, who is Michelle. Her daughter is Natalie. And then I am Natalie's friend, boyfriend.
Sure.
It's kind of vague in the show what happens there.
That is really an interesting perspective, because you're not in the middle, and that can be a really important, and life-changing place to come to.
And it gets set up a lot as him being in these awkward situations, which instinctually it's like, oh, this is funny, ba-dum-boom, as opposed to being kind of horrified that someone has to go through this, And so trying to find what the reaction is and what the observation is, because in a lot of ways we observe the story through Henry's eyes, because that's the character the audience, I think, sees the show through, in terms of also being an outsider.
And that makes sense, because any given family, whatever your situation is, it's normal to you. And so, and I can remember as a kid, and maybe all of you have had these experiences, you go and have dinner at a friend's house, and suddenly it's like, oh, we don't do it that way. You know, even if it's just something as simple as, you know, saying a prayer before dinner, or, you know, everybody has cloth napkins, or everybody just grabs and nobody passes plates, whatever those things are, it's your family, and now you're the one walking in, kind of witnessing, and then what does your character go through in observing and then trying to decide what to do with that information?
Well, yeah, I think it starts off as, I mean, there's a little confusion, and I think becoming accustomed to what their family life is like, and then I think that quickly turns to a lot of empathy. He's a very empathetic character, really helps Natalie kind of deal with everything she's going through with her family, kind of acts as an outlet for her almost, that she can, when things are too overwhelming at home, she can go to him and, yeah, kind of escape from it all. I think he acts as, yeah, kind of a rescue in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, kind of like Eric said, just a way for the audience to process what is happening, because he is kind of along with the audience learning about this family and kind of trying to come to terms with what they're going through at the same time.
Yeah.
And the teenage love aspect really adds an interesting dynamic to this story, because you're watching this marriage between Diana and her husband, Dan, and then you're also watching Natalie and Henry fall in love. And there are obvious story parallels to, you know, how Diana and Dan's relationship started that we're seeing echoed in how Natalie and Henry's relationship is starting. And so, you know, that those things at the beginning of a relationship that you see manifest later in a relationship, once it's more mature, I mean, there are obvious things that you can look to and say, you know, well, which path did we take with that choice and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for folks that are just tuning in, this is Art Zany Radio for the Imagination. I'm Paula Granquist. I'm here today, Eric Parrish, Michelle Drenth, and Elijah Lear from Next to Normal. We didn't even say we need to tell people when, because I bet they're all wanting to know how to get tickets. It opens July 27th at, you can go to northfieldartsguild.org on the theater page, that, or right on the front page, you can click on the image of the production, and it runs for 2 weekends. First weekend is a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and the next weekend, into August already we are. That's right around the corner. August 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th it runs. There is a 2 o'clock Sunday show both of those weekends, and the second weekend has that Thursday show. But click on the northfieldartsguild.org and get your tickets. It is at the Northfield Arts Guild Theater, and we want you to, it's, as you mentioned, it's a smaller theater, so, and we expect that there's a lot of interest in this show, and the music is really fantastic, and folks are going to want to see it, so you need to get your tickets soon. So I hope you can come down to the Arts Guild building downtown on Division Street as well to get your tickets. We should talk about the music, because not only are you dealing with this heavy issue, but as we were talking in the lobby here, you were telling me about how things are staged and timed. And I was blown away. I'm like thinking, I don't know how you can do this. So tell our listeners about the way that this musical is presented.
Well, so it's one of those shows where there's lots of things happening at the same time, right?
So you could go see it multiple times and probably get a lot out of it each time.
Yeah. Absolutely. And keeping that organized for the audience is kind of my job. You know, I always tell people when they ask me, you know, when you direct a musical, what's your, it's like, well, basically you're trying to deal with rush hour traffic in Los Angeles. You know, how do I keep everybody moving and how do I keep it clear of what's happening the whole time? So the way we design the set, you know, we have this multi-level kind of split level house, if you will. And there are 4 rooms plus the apron of the stage, and then we have a stair landing. So, and essentially, all 6 characters can have their own space at some point, so that you can kind of keep track. You know, I'm a person that likes to organize the refrigerator, so it's
that doesn't surprise me.
So it helps with this, honestly, because there's a lot going on. And I said, this is one of those musicals where, you know, old-fashioned musicals would have a song, and then the music would stop, and there would be dialogue, and then there'll be a song.
Yes.
And newer musicals, really starting with Rent, and you continue to see this, there's no in-between songs. So in this particular music, most of the dialogue is sung. If it's dialogue that's spoken, it's still over music. And so when you're learning dialogue as an actor, you need to have it timed with the music.
That's
so
really
difficult. It is. It's so hard. But the great part about it is, and we're getting to this point now, where you know it well enough that it comes out of your mouth like something you would say. Like, you become the character. You know when they would say it. You feel the music. You feel the beat that you're waiting for to deliver your dialogue. So that is really starting to come together right now, and it's so cool.
Yeah, it's very much like a movie, you know, like an underscore
of a good film.
Yeah. And, you know, and I tell performers that you have to pay attention to the landmarks in the sound, because, you know, the different musical themes represent different characters and different situations and different, you know, emotional things. And so it's one of those, like, okay, well, I have to say this line when we get to this part, you know. And again, there's a piece in the first act that Natalie sings called Mozart is Crazy, and it's hilarious, but I come from the opera world. I'm a classically trained singer. And so there's a very obvious parallel to me about how a Mozart opera works and how the finales are constructed to how this works. Mm-hmm. And not to say that it's classical in style, because it's not. It's a rock musical, and there's a lot of like funk and jazz and blues things. But the composer is so literate in the musical style that the musical styles almost is a commentary about when it shifts, and, you know, each character kind of has their own musical personality.
So it sounds like you couldn't do this play or this production, that the music is so integral that it would it play as a drama?
Well, I think it is a drama because of the music.
Because of the music. Yeah. Okay.
And the subject matter, of course. Yeah.
They're interwoven.
They are. And they're so, you know, sometimes as we're staging everything, we will speak our lines,
the song lyrics,
exactly, as if they're lines. They do work, but I mean, the music is unbelievably beautiful. I have been in dozens of musicals over my lifetime, and there are just a few that really resonate in terms of the quality of the music. I mean, the music's difficult. Peter Webb is doing the music direction with us, and he does a fabulous job, and there's a whole band that's been assembled for this, and it's going to be lovely music. So it's fun to be a part of that.
And how are you doing with that timing of integrating the music and the lyrics and the lines?
Well, one thing that I've kind of learned to do over the last few weeks is really recognizing what the words I'm saying within lyrics mean, because I think sometimes acting in musicals, it's easy to like have your song and not really pay attention to what you're saying because you're trying so hard to like sell it, like
hit
a musical theater actor.
Yeah,
exactly. Or you're just getting through the song to get to the part where the story advances, which is the like spoken dialogue. And this is so different because the words that matter are the ones being sung. And so first of all, you really need to enunciate well for one, because obviously the audience has to understand what is being sung. But then also to properly emote what you're feeling, what the words you're saying, how they make you feel, how you're expressing yourself. So I think that's one of the things that we've, I think, worked in pretty well, is really getting what we're saying, what we're feeling, what we're emoting to match up and to really resonate with the audience.
So often musicals, the song like pauses the action and lets us feel what they're feeling. And this is, the music is delivering the action.
I think, yeah, that's a definite distinction. And I think that I actually prefer this style as opposed to somebody telling me through song. I like it being integrated.
Well, it keeps the plot moving more quickly, you know, and, you know, in the attention span age that we have, you know, it's easier to, I think, stay engaged that way.
Right, and so that's exciting that there's a live band with this, a great musical direction. It's essential to this. It sounds very ambitious,
and
this
all
production.
The singers are just, they're fantastic.
It's, we should talk about the rest of the cast.
Yeah.
Tell
us, what are the other characters in the production?
So Dan, the husband, is played by Kevin Eidecker. He's from Owatonna, and he's been in a couple dance things at the Guild. Mm-hmm. Dance Macabres, I think.
Yeah.
And so he's really great. I saw him in Jesus Christ Superstar at Little Theater Owatonna a long time ago.
Yeah, that's a tough show too.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And let's see, Greta Jacobson, also from Owatonna. She is really fantastic, and she was just in Aida at Owatonna High School, and huge voice, super fun personality.
Now, there's a singing part.
Okay,
that
so here's a Greta moment. So in the Broadway production of this show, the young woman, because Greta plays my daughter, Natalie, and on Broadway, someone else, there's a piano part. So the Mozart is Crazy song is a piano recital.
It's an actual Mozart piano sonata that they put lyrics to.
Words over.
Whoa.
And in the Broadway production, someone else plays the piano, and the young woman who plays the daughter mimes that she's playing the piano on stage. And you go with it. You know, there's a suspension of disbelief there. Greta plays the piano. She plays the Mozart song.
She came to the audition with
over
it,
the top
memorized.
Of it. She's amazing.
Whoa. Yeah. Oh, that knocks your socks
off.
Yeah,
it's definitely a show-stopping moment to go, whoa, she's actually doing that. And then Brian Reed is the final actor. You know, he's from Northfield, obviously. And he was also in Pirates, actually. That's kind of another connection to that. So I had worked with I've worked with everyone except for Greta. I knew who Kevin was, and I had worked with everyone at least once. Oh, yeah, Kyle. I forgot about Kyle.
Oh, Kyle, my son. My son. You can't forget about Kyle.
Yeah, Kyle Yetzer is from Lonsdale.
Yeah.
And, I hadn't worked with him before. He was new to me. But everybody else was kind of on my radar about that.
What are some of the conversations that you have had as a cast in, you know, bringing the show to life, dealing with the issue of presenting mental illness and the emotional journey that each character takes, that you can't help but, I would imagine, as an actor, bring that inside of you as well. And, you know, that can, you know, raise some questions and I would imagine some great conversations.
There are a lot of parallels in this musical, or pieces of it that parallel our own lives. I mean, everyone's life is complex, whether you're part of the young adult group that's part of this show, and you're dealing with, you know, parent and your nuclear family, or whether you are the parent and you've created your own nuclear family, or you're dealing with adult parents or whatever. There are pieces of this musical that are recognizable in each one of our lives. And so we have a lot of conversations about that. This cast has become very close very quickly because the subject matter is so heavy. There's so much singing. You're in each other's space all the time. So I would say that's been one of the great things about this cast, is people have been very open and willing to have those conversations. And the cast has a heck of a lot of fun. I mean, so when you're doing something this heavy, you know, when we drop the scene, when we're done with the scene and we're, you know, or even done at the end of the night, there's a lot of laughing. There's a lot of socializing that happens, because I think you have to be able to shake the intensity off to a certain extent.
So we should talk about that in terms of an audience member and how, you know, what expectations people can have, not knowing a show and going in. This one sounds like maybe if you had just a little bit of information about what to expect, it might make your experience that more, memorable. And
don't be scared by us saying it's intense and it's dark and all this heavy stuff.
There are parts of it where it's so funny.
That's what I wanted people to hear.
A lot of funny moments, yeah.
Yeah, there are some very comedic moments. And the other thing is that the writing is very, it's gone through a lot. The gestation period for this musical was significant. It was like 10 years or something like that.
Before even 2010.
Yeah, and they had rewritten it. They had tried it a couple workshops in New York. They did it out of town. They took it to Off-Broadway. Then they took it. Then they stopped it. Then they went to D.C. and redid it. And then they brought it to New York.
It's always amazing to me how much work it takes just to, you know, get it to that finished stage.
But that process has allowed it to be very good at, you know, making sure that the balance between the drama and the comedy and where you need a break is put in there. There was a song that was cut. She has a breakdown in a Costco and with the shopping cart, and it's a great song, and it's in a lot of the original incarnation called Feeling Electric before they changed the name to Next to Normal.
And was the original.
Yeah, and you can see this you know, on YouTube, and it's a great number, but it really just messes up the storytelling ability, you know. So the writing is really succinct, and it's very efficient at doing its work, and that's, you know, it's rare in a modern musical to everything matters. You know, everything counts, everything has a purpose, everything is doing its job, you know, dramatically.
Right, and that's interesting. You said that the first original title is Feeling Electric. That doesn't grab me the same way, because I think that word normal is something we often are comparing ourselves and thinking, well, is this, you know, is my family normal? Is this a normal thing for me to be thinking or feeling? Or is it, you know, there's that set point that normal allows, but there's also a danger in that categorization of wanting to be normal, because maybe just who you are is, I don't know, I'm kind of thinking about that title is more grabbing to me. And
yeah,
what has normal become to know for each of you?
The original show focused more on the medicine and the electroshock therapy and the drugs and what was happening to her and how it was happening and what they were doing to her.
And that feels like what we were doing at that time.
Yes.
Was how we were treating mental illness. Yeah.
And the story, in order to tell it, they shifted it quite significantly to talk about how that family coped with it. Mm-hmm. And so I think the title switch came, because actually Natalie, the daughter, is the one who delivers the title in the dialogue in the show, right? And she's like, something next to normal would be okay, is, you know.
I love it.
And and so that, you know, that shift on telling the story of the family, and, you know, as a dramatist, that's the part that helps me, right? Because I'm telling, does the love story work? Am I telling this dynamic? Is there a shift in these characters? Are they growing as humans? Do we have that empathy for them? And, you know, and so for it to be less superficial about the medicine and more about these lives, mm-hmm. that makes it easier as a director to say, okay, well, really, I'm telling this story about these people and
mm-hmm.
what's happening
yeah.
to these people. And it just happens to be about this other important thing, you know, and that's what great drama is about.
Has the definition of normal been something that you have shifted or thought about in terms of our community, your family, or mental illness?
Yeah, I mean, and let's be clear, I don't think that people in musical theater often think of themselves as quote-unquote normal, right? let's be super clear about that. So so we're all kind of on the fringe anyway, right? And so I do think that, you know, the line that Natalie delivers is, I don't need a life that's normal, that's way too far away. Something next to normal would be okay. And I think, right? And it's
I wanna,
at the
like,
end
have
of the
that-
show. Oh,
on
I know. It should be one of those quotes that you put on something, right?
Yeah.
Because that's exactly it. No one's normal. There's not a normal. People who appear to be normal probably really aren't, right? That's not something that you should emulate or strive for. That's not what people are. And that's what makes people interesting. So I think this show does a good job of addressing that.
Well, Diana has a line that where she's talking to Natalie towards the end of the show, and she says, I wanted to give you a normal life. I realize now that I have no idea what that is.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know, I feel like that's evocative of a lot of people's beliefs, like they want their own lives to be normal, while there's really no real definition of what that's going to be for you.
Right.
Yeah, we talk a lot about self-love in the rehearsal process, I think, and for me, when I'm directing the show, that, you know, these characters are all trying to love, figure out how to love themselves, whether they know it or not. That's essentially the journey that they're on. And I think that's the journey we're all on. Mm-hmm. And the lyric at the end about, you know, let there will be light, you know, when your darkest day is over, there will be light.
Mm.
And it leaves you in that place, you know. So for how heavy and how emotional this journey is, it, you know, I think we're all feeling, you know, lots of people have felt that in recent days and years, about, you know, can it get worse? Can we be more angry with one another, more separated, more divided? And this show leaves you with, when that is over, it will be better.
Right. And there's that, you know, just that idea of having stories about families and revealing and stepping inside of that. That's why I love art, because it shows you inside the world of another person or a place you've never been, or a dynamic or a subculture that you don't know, that lets you experience it and know it. And, you know, if we're not getting those conversations in our day-to-day lives where we're, you know, learning, you know, about how other families work or about how other communities work, then art is the way that you can see you through those moments,
which is what this whole season is about. At, you know,
yeah,
with striking conversations. Our actual talkbacks conversation is that first Sunday.
Yeah, that's Sunday, July 29th at the 2 p.m. show. There's a post show discussion,
yeah,
and those are a part of that striking conversations at the Arts Guild. And there'll be an opportunity where there'll be someone help guiding a conversation,
yep,
between audience and cast.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I think this one is really probably an essential.
I think so, too. Like, get in our heads. Figure out what we have seen, you know, as we've played these characters and looked in on this from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be glad to talk
and
about that.
And that was really the thing that drew me to direct this show for, you know, the Guild. I have never directed a show for the Guild, but I've directed it extensively.
Me. I feel like you just should have been here.
Right.
All the time.
So I've always told Rachel, it has to be the right piece. It has to be the right piece. And then when I saw this on the season and they were looking for directors, I called her and I said, remember when I told you it has to be the right piece? I said, this is the right piece. And she goes, I had a feeling we'd hear from you about this.
And so have you seen it in other productions or on,
yeah,
Broadway?
So I saw the tour with the original Alice Ripley was the original Diana, and that was up at the Ordway. Actually, Megan Proft and I went whenever that was, a while ago, I think 2010, 2011, 2012 maybe. And I have seen another production, just a local production of that, and it's really amazing how adaptable it is, you know, but, you know, it requires some really fantastic singing. And I think that's one reason it doesn't get done. And, you know, it is kind of heavy and it does require a significant amount of talent and high notes.
So from many high notes.
From you too?
Yeah.
Even
in his very low voice.
Yeah,
What else should we talk about this production? What do audiences need to know? You know, why should they jump onto the Arts Guild website to make sure that they get their tickets for this one?
Well, Paula, you and I talked briefly before we walked in here. You know, it's a musical, but it's not Mary Poppins. So it's probably...
Nor is it The Sound of Music.
It's not The Sound of Music. It's probably a PG-13 kind of experience. So this is not... And it's... I mean, there's a fair amount of swearing in it, let's be clear. But there's also
a fair amount of overt sexual,
yeah, references.
Not bad, but just, it's, you know, they're sexual
adult
beings.
And little,
yeah,
kids aren't going to get it, right? So so this is something that, you know, older kids certainly would love, and I think families will love this. I mean, you know, adult members of families, my whole brood is coming one of the first nights, and I have young adult children at this point in time. It'll be interesting to see their reaction to me playing this role. There are definitely parts of Diana that are very similar to me, and I expect for my children to point that out.
She was the first person I thought of when we were going to...
No accident.
Exactly. But I do think it provokes conversation around this. I think it allows people to step back and go, oh, our family was a little bit like that. So I think it's just a great show to, you know, strike the conversation. I think it's a really good way to insert that into this season. I think that's this is the last one in,
yep,
the Striking Conversations season. And I think it's a good one to finish on.
Well, and conversations within your family dynamic,
yeah,
you know, they're, It's just amazing, you know, even as the director, I mean, I've read it 100 times and I've seen it 100 times now, you know, through rehearsal. And I still, last night, something wasn't working right on stage. And I sat down in a chair and everybody was there. And I just had to, I walked through the emotional journey of the character. Okay, you say this, which implies this, which suggests this, which, you know, and I think more so than other pieces I've directed, I've had more questions for the actors, you know, to trust their instincts, and to watch those journeys. Just because, you know, everyone's life experience is different, and you all see these things in different ways, and you know, to find those places and to create an environment for the actor to really be vulnerable, and really, you know, we talk about transference a lot, about taking a moment from your life that you feel, that you know about, that is applied to this situation. And, you know, these actors have been really just great about giving and being emotional and allowing themselves to really just find the emotional place. I mean, I don't think I've worked on a piece in which the dynamic of the cast and the talent has just been so open. And, you know, it's definitely one of the harder pieces I've ever directed, just trying to keep it organized and dealing with the heavy topic and things like that. But these guys really make it easy to direct, and because they just give so much, which is, you know, it's not, you don't always find that in a group, especially in community theater. And so it's just been a super joyful experience, even though the topic isn't a joyful topic, but they have, as artists, all of them have just been wonderful. And I think that really comes through in their performances when you watch them.
I was going to say the audience can feel that and relate to that and be immersed in the moment.
And I think that's fun as an audience member. It's like, God, those people are really into it. And it's just, you know, it makes you excited, you know, and you get goosebumps just because of that.
And Elijah, why would you encourage young adults to come and be, you know, a part of Next to Normal?
Well, I think there are, I mean, for everyone who comes, there are so many things to relate to. But specifically, maybe for younger people around my age, I think there's a lot of resonance with maybe the stress of high school. For example, Natalie, the daughter, is, especially at the beginning, very preoccupied with kind of being the perfect daughter, and is involved in all sorts of extracurricular activities, and just really trying to keep her head above water. So I think there's a lot to relate to there. And then it also, the show kind of showcases her journey in dealing with that. And she kind of falls apart in the second act. And she recovers. And I think it has a...
Well, self-acceptance and self-love. I mean, you're trying to get the grades, you're trying to get the scholarship, you're practicing, you're trying to be this perfect child. You see that your mom is not well, and you're trying to not be, you know, you're running away from the fear of becoming that. And, you know, kids are under a lot of stress, especially this day and age. I mean, I'm not that old, but, I mean, I feel like I'm getting to the point in my life where I go like, well, in my day, it wasn't that stressful, right? But, you know, with social media and all these things, there's just so much opportunity to be bullied or singled out. Or
you're just always comparing yourself to other people.
Right. I mean,
and like, oh,
they're doing this and they're doing that. You know, we all get caught up in that. And that, you know, I think that's why it won the awards that it did, because it really depicts life the way we see life.
And that's what great art is being able to see real life and reflect on that. And so I thank you so much for coming to Art Zany Radio, for sharing your stories. Eric Parrish, Elijah Lear, and Michelle Drenth. The show is Next to Normal at the Northfield Arts Guild. It opens on the 27th, so get your tickets now. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
As folks, we have just another minute here. I'm going to quick tell you about a couple things. Last week, my guests were from the Northfield Garden Tour. That's happening this weekend, so I thank Elizabeth Olson and on a chance for being here. The Northfield Garden Tour is Saturday the 14th and Sunday the 15th from 11 to 4. You can visit thenorthfieldgardenclub.org to get information or look for the signs around this weekend and just start at any garden and enjoy the beautiful gardens in our community. Also want to mention the Northfield Noontime Organ Recitals are continuing. A couple weeks ago, Richard Coleman and Marilyn Shemp and Noah Klein were here, and the next one is July 18th at the Bow Chapel. Those happen at noon on Wednesdays, so that Catherine Rodland is going to be a part of that performance. Another great summer event here in Northfield. You've been listening to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. I hope you don't forget to add some Art Zany to your life, a little bit of Next to Normal as well. And in the meantime, till next time, enjoy your imagination.
You've been listening to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zany is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault. Enjoy an amazing July music lineup at the Paradise Center for the Arts. Saturday, July 14th, Mick Sterling's Memphis and the Meantimes performs some of country's best Grand Ole Opry and Sun Records music. Sunday, July 15th, join children and youth ages 9 to 21 from around the world on their Songs of Hope Global Youth Tour. This free concert features songs from favorite Broadway musicals. For more information or to purchase tickets, go to ParadiseCenterForTheArts.org or call 507-332-7372 or visit the Paradise Box Office.